Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Haha, psych out. This is actually the producer, Scott Fullerton. Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0. Rebecca and Joe are having a little trouble calling in this morning. We got to get our Skype connection working. So we're going to start the show in just a little bit. We have the fantastic Sarah Fader here, CEO of StigmaFighters.com. But we're going to start off with a little bit of a song here. We're going to play a little Superfruit Rise. It's Katy Perry's cover of Rise by Brian Justin Crumb, Scott Hoying, and Mitch DeGrasse and friends. So we're going to be pop in about 3 minutes here to give you a start here. Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0. We'll have Sarah and Joe and Rebecca back in just a couple of minutes.
I won't just survive. Oh, you will see me thrive. Can write my story. I'm beyond the archetype.
Good morning, and welcome to Voices for Change 2.0.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for joining us. Hope we're sounding okay. Had to do things a little bit differently today with our setup, so bear with us.
Yeah, we've been experiencing some technical difficulties with Skype, on our end here. So we are doing the show via cell phone today. So that should be an interesting adventure. But today we're talking to someone that has tirelessly worked towards ending the stigma surrounding mental illness. She is a talented author. She's an advocate, blogger, a CEO, and a mom. And we're really excited to have her on the show with us today. So please welcome Miss Sarah Fader.
Paula, how you guys doing?
Doing okay. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks for getting up and being all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed on this wonderful Saturday morning.
Oh, you know, I don't have a choice because I have, like, little shorties in my house that wake me up at 6.
Oh, yeah. So do we, but ours are four-legged and furry.
That's okay. Actually, I told Rebecca yesterday, I was like, I have four cats, and I'm definitely talking about them tomorrow.
All right, it's not like we don't talk about ours.
Yeah.
Well, you know, yeah. I'm already obsessed with Haley. Like, I'm starting the Haley fan club.
You're not the first person to say that. There's another girl, and she could even be listening. She has a nickname for her. She wants to start, because she's a graphic artist, she wants to start like a comic book for her and all this stuff. So she has some serious fans.
Yeah.
You know what? I think you need to like get on that right now. Like, I feel like Haley needs a comic book.
I actually would enjoy that very much if our little Haley Booze had her own comic book.
I love that. Well, she's so charismatic. Do you know what sign she is?
No, we don't. We got her in late August when, like 3 weeks after we got married, but not really sure exactly when she was born. She was
I know all of my cat's astrological signs because that's how crazy I am.
Wow. It got us beat. The only one that we know for sure when she was born is our littlest one, Abby.
Abby.
We know for a fact. Yeah, she was born in September.
So is she a Virgo or a Libra? When's her birthday?
We don't know the actual date.
Yeah,
we just adopted her from a...
Okay, is she like neurotic or is she super friendly?
She's neurotic.
She's neurotic.
So she's a Virgo. That makes sense.
Okay, well, let's get off the subject of the cats before we bore the hell out of our audience. Do you have any questions for us before we dive in?
Go for it.
Okay.
Wait.
All right, so how old were you when you first started experiencing mental health-related issues?
Okay, that is a complicated question. I have had symptoms of anxiety since I was a child, anxiety and depression, and I can remember six, seven years old getting acid reflux from being anxious and being in school and feeling alienated and crying because I felt misunderstood.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then, you know, I mean, I was always a very introverted person in the sense that I had a very rich internal world and I did not let people into that. And I don't know whether that's like a personality thing or a mental illness thing. I think it's kind of a little of both, you know? It was like a protection mechanism almost. Like I just kind of shut down and like went into my brain. So, but then I started getting like panic attacks when I was bullied in the eighth grade. And then they escalated to being like somatic symptoms, like vomiting and things like that when I was in high school. So it's kind of not an easy question to answer because I guess technically I started getting symptoms when I was a kid, but they went full-fledged into like diagnosable something when I was a teenager.
So it's kind of been an all your life kind of ordeal then for you, really.
I think so. But I think the clinical answer is teenager.
Okay. That's kind of the same theme that we've been seeing, all along with everybody that we've talked to and with what Beck went through it seems like this stuff always tends to manifest you know, when you're going through, you know, puberty hits and, you know, all these different social pressures start to hit, you know, oh my God, does he like me? Oh my God, I have to go to the dance. Oh my God, I've got this, and I've got that. And it's, you know, before that, before high school, before, you know, junior high, you know, all you cared about was, you know, playing with your friends and going out and running around and having a good time, you know? So
I don't know, though. I mean, I think there, I had somewhat of that feeling, but as a child, I still was a very anxious child. Like, I was not a carefree child. I had a lot of, I was worried. I used to have thoughts that didn't make sense to me, that terrified me. I think mostly related to, like, OCD. Like, I would like, touch glue and then put my finger in my mouth and be like, and then think I was dying, you know?
Wow.
Like weird things like that. I mean, not weird, because like it's that's OCD, you know?
Right.
But I didn't know. I was like, something is very wrong and I don't know what that means. And so what I guess my point is, like, it's not, I was never really a carefree person. I mean, I always say, like, now I'm a very immature person. Like, I can't believe I'm 37 and I'm, like, responsible for children because I'm so immature. But at the same time, I'm immature, but I'm absolutely not carefree. Like, I'm funny and I'm, like, you know, wacky and eccentric, but I am always worrying about things. And that's the way that I was as a child. And what I would do is, like, deflect from my anxiety by doing wacky, crazy shit. And so I think that, especially when I went to high school, you know, I went to performing arts high school, so I was able to transmit put all that energy into my art. And it was really helpful in order to have a place to put it, like a catharsis.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. I'm kind of jealous too, because I kind of wish I'd been able to go to performing arts high school. They don't really have them around here.
I mean, yeah. It was cool. Like, there were things that I liked about it, and there were things that I didn't like about it. I can say that I was on Daria. Like, that's cool. You know, like, I was a voice on MTV's Daria, and that made me happy and was a.
That's awesome.
Like, wow, that's really cool.
You can find me on IMDb. I think that, yeah, it's like my one credit on IMDb. I'm like, look, I exist. But I think the thing that was hard for me about being in that kind of environment and having mental illness is that I had to hide it in a way. Like, everybody was, like, super into their art and things, and I was too. But I was also, like, suicidal and, you know, waking up every day and vomiting because I couldn't go to – I went to school, but I was having trouble, like, functioning. And and in the 90s, when I was in high school, you didn't talk about that shit. You know, like, you just, mm-hmm. like, you had to just be whatever. Like, you had to just do your thing. And I was friends with all guys in high school. Like, mainly my core group of friends were dudes. So – They didn't know what mental illness was. You know what I mean? Like, they were like,
right.
I mean, I hung out with, like, people that, you know, I mean, I had not all guys, like I had female friends too, but it was like, we just hung out and played Magic the Gathering and, like, nerded out, you know? So that was, like, what we did. And also, the other thing that was difficult for me in high school was that I was in love with somebody who did not understand what I was going through. Like, we were in a relationship, and he did not understand that I was ill, and so he didn't know how to help me.
Right.
And it was a very intense relationship, and to this day, like, I still have not fully processed what happened, but it was formative, and it impacted me in the sense that I knew that because of that relationship, any relationship that I got into, how do I explain this? Like, I was afraid of being rejected because of my illness, essentially. Like, and I still have that, Like, I'm afraid a lot of times, like, enter into relationships with men because I'm afraid they're going to be like, well, you're crazy. Bye. You know?
Right.
And that's, you know, that's a very valid thing to be afraid of, you know, because it does happen, you know?
It's happened to me many times.
Yeah, you get it. I mean, you understand.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's like, and the other thing about that is, like, first of all, like you said, it's not unfounded. Right. Like it actually like happens to people. And
right.
in that relationship, this is so interesting. And I think you guys will appreciate this from like a blogging social media perspective. So I wrote a blog post about this guy, and I wrote it not to like, you know, throw him under the bus or whatever. I just wrote it to get out my story, you know, and say, hey, like I was in love with this person and I showed him my crazy, like I showed him everything who I was, and he rejected me. And so because of that, I have abandonment issues, like severe rejection and abandonment issues. Right now,
right.
As a consequence of this, at the time we had stayed in touch because he was my first love. Like I loved him. I mean, I was like totally head over heels in love with this person. And it was mutual. And so, but we stayed in touch, you know, he got married, I got married to someone else. And he saw this post that I wrote where, you know, I was writing about him. I didn't name him. It wasn't like I was like, this is the person, you know, but anybody who went to high school with me is going to know who I'm talking about.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So he read it and he wrote me and said, you know, your post really, really hurt my feelings. It was messed up. And I was like, I'm sorry that it impacted you that way, but I have a right to my feelings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
You know, and, but then as a result of this, so he unfriended me on Facebook because of this post. And, then, you know, called me selfish and like called me like a bitch or whatever. And it took me a while to like process that because I was like, well, did I do something messed up? Like, I don't really know, you know? And I still, like, I sometimes like, obsess over that post and I reread it and I'm like, did I really? I don't know, you know? But at the same time, like, the part of me that is, like, quote-unquote rational knows that I have a right to my story.
Right, exactly. You know, you wrote what you felt at the time, and I'm sure probably now too. And, you know, in that moment, you know, it was where you were at. It was where your head was at, you know, and that's, you absolutely have that right to do that, you know, and, you know, yeah, it's a drag that he unfriended you and that, you know, he took it badly and everything. And, you know, that's his right to feel that way too. You know, it's too bad that he couldn't put himself more in your shoes and what you were going through.
Thank you for saying that, because it was hurtful to me, and I felt, and it basically, like, the implication was that I was narcissistic by writing this, and that's not what I meant to do. It wasn't like, this is all about me. Like, I said in this post, and I still feel this very deeply on a deep, profound level, he was a 15-year-old boy, okay? Like, he did not know what to do with someone who had mental illness. And that was not fair of me to put him in a situation where I'm saying to him, if you leave me, I'm going to kill myself. Right? Like, that's not okay. And, like, I didn't say that explicitly, but I said to him, if you don't love me, I feel like I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, and that, and like, again, it freaked me out, and I was like, am I gonna kill myself? You know, and I was like, I don't know, like, I don't want to kill myself, but I just said that, and of course my brain like imploded on itself, you know, and like I feel crazy even telling the story right now because it's so ridiculous, but it's true, so whatever. So the point is that. Shit happens and people say things that they don't necessarily understand the implications of. And that's what happened there, which is just that I emoted and it was impulsive. And I, you know, as a 15-year-old, your frontal lobe is not fully developed. You know, like you're still kind of like processing things and learning how your superego works. And so I feel like that's kind of, you know, and my impulse control has gotten better. I'm 37. I think I'm kind of an adult a little bit. but like, you know, like
well
I said,
underway.
Yeah, I'm working on it. You know, it's a daily process, minute by minute. But the point is that it wasn't fair of me to put him in a situation in which he was the caretaker, because a 15-year-old boy can't do that. And that's what I tried to say in that post, and that's what I feel, is that I don't think that what I did to him was fair. Now, I don't know that he can hear that ever, or he doesn't want to talk to me, so it doesn't matter. But like, I don't think that he'll ever be able to conceptualize that. But that's his limitation, not mine.
Right.
Go ahead. I was gonna say just moving on with our questions there, Sarah. What have you been diagnosed with?
So my formal diagnosis is panic disorder and depression. Panic disorder, depression, and ADHD. I self-diagnosed myself with PTSD because of the trauma that I have been through. But I've never had a doctor tell me that, but I know that I have it.
Okay.
Yeah. Weren't you telling me something when we talked last?
Yesterday?
Yeah.
Another
situation that you were dealing with. God, what the heck? I know that you had wanted to, it was something visual.
Oh, yeah, I have a visual spatial learning disability. So I have a visual spatial learning disability that is connected with my ADHD.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. I had it written down somewhere and forgot to write it down where it should have been. So
it's okay. That's kind of ironic, right? Because it's like visual.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So did you feel that at the time of your diagnosis, did you feel as if you were supported by family or friends?
Which diagnosis?
Well, let's say the final one how about the most recent?
Having ADHD, you mean?
Yeah, and the depression and the anxiety.
Okay, so
any of it at all?
Yeah,
depression. I know it's so funny. I was talking to my friend about this, and I'm like, you know, if you like go to Amazon and order mental illnesses for your brain, like depression is like an add-on Amazon Prime item. Like everyone always forgets about it, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess the answer to that is yes. Because you know, it runs in my family. So my parents were very cool about it. And they supported me and understood. And my mom was very helpful in the sense that she did not placate or baby me in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I'd be like, I don't want to go to school. I can't. And my mom was like, I know you don't want to, but you're going to feel better if you do.
Okay. So she was positively pushing you, maybe?
Yeah, I don't necessarily like the term pushing, because pushing has a pejorative connotation. But
right.
I know what you're saying. I'm just saying that in general, because you know, if you think about it literally, right? Like pushing somebody seems kind of bad, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like she was. I'm trying to think of how to explain this. Challenging is a good word I would say, right? Like she challenged me in a positive way, because the thing is that if you think about children and the way that they learn, you don't learn if you're in your comfort zone. You learn in the sweet spot that is between your comfort zone and where you're uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that is what my mom did for me, and that is what I feel like a lot of people need in order to grow.
Yeah, definitely.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very, I like that outlook. I like how you present that.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's taken me a while to, like, figure that out because, you know, like, when I'm depressed, like, I don't want to fucking do anything. Like, I want to hide under my bed, you know? So it's nice to be able to have friends and a support system that says, I know that you don't want to get in the shower and do shit, but you have to.
Right. It's that little...
Yeah, I totally get that because I'm even struggling with that at this point. There's days when I can't even focus on that. It's too much. It's too overwhelming. You know, there's days when leaving the bed is just way too overwhelming for me. So
mm-hmm.
I completely understand that. And I think it's a very, very common, I hear that quite a bit from a lot of different people.
Yeah, and the other thing is that I don't have your illness, right? So I don't
mm-hmm.
know what it's like to be in your head. I have mine.
Mm.
So I can't say to you, just do this.
Right.
You know, because whatever.
Yeah, and there
that,
are so many people. There's so many people out there that think that they can do that.
Yeah, and I think that's the mistake that people make, is that in order to help someone, you need to figure out who they are first.
Right.
Right. You know, you saying that, it makes me think of this. I'll say this, and I know we have to go to break. You know, it's trying to solve the riddle of mental illness. It should be looked at in the same respects as physical illness, but it shouldn't be looked at in the exact same way. Like, if you break a bone, you get your bone set, and it heals, and that's how you do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like you said, you know, Rebecca's illness isn't your illness, isn't the next person's illness. You all might have, you know, say every one of them has depression, but it can't all get treated the same way because it's, you know, you're dealing with you know, brain chemistry and,
yes,
you know, what's going on up there.
But here's the thing, and I'm very passionate about this.
Mm-hmm.
Mental illness does not give you an excuse to be an asshole.
No.
Oh, no.
No, not at all.
And I wrote that exact article for Psychology Today with that title. And it is the truth. So you can do things that hurt people because you're human, but you need to take responsibility for your actions.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly.
So if you do something in psychosis that's fucked up, you need to apologize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. But we have to take a quick break, Sarah. We're actually a little late for our break today. Everything's running a little bit late today, so
that's okay. I talk a lot.
No, you're doing great.
Fine. You're doing great.
So we are going to go to break, and we'll be playing a song by James Cobe, by the James Cobe Experience, If I Could.
If I could, I'd make every day a beauty, every day a wonderful hello for you. If I could, I would give you everything, anything to make you. If If I could, I would wash away the tears of all your sorrows and make them disappear. If you would, just allow me in your heart, and you'll know what love can be. Now the world can make you feel happy.
Welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I'm Joe, she's Rebecca, and that lovely lady over there is the wonderful and talented Miss Sarah Fader.
Hello.
How you doing?
How you doing?
How you doing?
How you doing?
Jury's out.
Yeah, really.
Hey, Sarah, what made you decide to start your website, StigmaFighters.com?
Well, Joe... sorry, that was really fun. I decided to do that. sorry, I'm like really delirious.
No, that's okay.
Stigma Fighters, well, Stigma Fighters is actually a nonprofit organization. So it is a 501c3 mental health nonprofit organization. And it became that way through the power of community. And I did start Stigma Fighters because I wanted to provide a place for people to tell their stories. So when I wrote my story about living with mental illness on the Huffington Post, I started getting feedback from people asking to tell their stories, and I looked for a place for them to do that, and I couldn't find one, so I just decided to start one, and that's what I did. And then I met my business partner, Allie Burke, who also is a Psychology Today columnist like myself. and she became one of my very best friends in the whole world. She has paranoid schizophrenia, and she is amazing. She's way more stable than I am. It's so funny. Like, she has a more severe illness, but she's, like, the more stable in the tribe of us. My joke with her is my anxiety loves her paranoia. And it's so, so, so true. So she is like more, I'm like, let's go to the moon. And she's like, I think we should finish this proposal first. And that's basically how our relationship works. She's like, maybe you don't need to eat that candy. So thank God for her. But yeah, so together we founded it into a nonprofit, and then we started taking the stories from the website and making them into books. And one of the coolest things about it is that so initially it was published, the books were published through a hybrid publisher. So I didn't get an agent or anything fancy like that. I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to do it this way. And then I wrote the Barnes & Noble small press department, and I said, you know, I put in a proposal to, like, have them sell the books in the store, and they said yes. And I was like, I think I'm hallucinating, but okay. So then they were selling them in select Barnes & Nobles in New York, and I'm like, okay, now that they're there, let me try to get a reading at Barnes & Noble, because that's how, like, ridiculous I am. And so I did. So I got a reading at Barnes & Noble on the 86th Street location on the Upper West Side, two blocks away from my old house that I grew up in, and it was totally like a homecoming and so awesome. And then 3 days after my reading, my publisher went under. But it was so great, because I was like, I don't care. I just fucking read at Barnes & Noble, you know? I don't really care. You know, like, I'm good now. And so I have a video of that. Like, I posted on Facebook Live, and I was, like, super psyched. But then I had to scramble, because I had no publisher, and I didn't want this book to, like, not exist anymore. So I just decided to, like, self-publish on Amazon, because why not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I did, and we have two volumes, and they're both on Amazon. And then this crazy thing happened where I have a friend, a mutual friend that you know her, Rebecca. You know Rachel Griffin?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. So Rachel and I are buds, and she was featured in the Washington Post. So she connected me with this woman who writes for the Washington Post, whose name is Colby Ikowitz. And she was like, I'm interested in learning more about stigma fighters. And I was like, oh, great. And because I have, like, serious balls, I was like, do you want to talk on the phone? Right? Mm-hmm. I'm like saying this like a Washington Post reporter. So then we talked on the phone, and she's like, I would like to write an article about stigma fighters in the Washington Post. And I was like, what?
That's actually my next question for you.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what happened. So then it became, but it was not, so it wasn't just about stigma fighters. Like, she interviewed me about it, and then it became like this huge spread about all these mental health advocates, which was so awesome, because it was people that I have tremendous respect for. So, like, Jennifer Keeley Marshall, who runs This Is My Brave, another nonprofit, was in it. And Rachel was in it. And we had a photo shoot, and it was on, like, page A1, the front page of the Washington Post. Like, I have the physical newspaper. And I'm like, it was very, very exciting and surreal. And
sounds really awesome.
Yeah.
It was really, really awesome. And, like, I don't – honestly, I can die now, because I'm like, that happened.
It sounds awesome, and I'm just a tiny bit jealous, like I want to scratch your eyeballs out.
Aw, don't do that. I won't have any eyes.
I'm just kidding, but it does sound amazing. I remember seeing the posts about it, but I never got to actually take a look at the article. So congratulations. That's you know, that's a huge, huge step in the right direction for the whole mental health community.
Thank you. Yeah, you should read the article, though, because it's a lot of really cool people. And that's what I liked about it, is that, to me, I don't care. Like, I like the things that I do, and I'm happy to do them, but I don't – I want to – I would rather pay I'm very empathic, so, like, I would rather be like, that person's really cool over there, too. You should check them out, you know?
Right,
right.
It's not fake. It's not pretentious. It's not like I'm just saying that to, like, look cool. Like, I really do think that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's absolutely amazing that you brought other people into it, and that it became, you know, as big as it did. That's, like I said, it's a huge step in the right direction. So.
I think so. I also think that, like, the one thing that I really, really can't stand is, like, fake humility. So that's the thing. That's why I'm saying it. Like, I really do believe in other people. And that's why I do the things that I do, because, like, I love to see people succeed, and I don't understand people that don't think like that. It confuses me. Actually, no, that's not true. Yeah. I get it. I understand it, like, theoretically. But I think that it's not the right way to look at things.
Right. You know, I don't get, you know, I'm succeeding and you're succeeding, but because you're succeeding too, I'm going to drag you down. That makes no sense to me.
No, it doesn't. You know? I mean, the whole thing is, like, the thing for me is, like, when you help someone and when I meet somebody, right? And I'm like, and I get to know them, And I find out more about them, and I whatever, I'm always thinking of ways that I can, like, connect them to the right person so that they can succeed. Like, that's how I think. And I don't know why. Like, I couldn't tell you why. That's just my brain. I'm always just like, this person does this cool thing and they should meet this other person or do this. Like, that's just the way that I think. And I think it's because of my mom. Like, my mom was always like that, and she worked in PR and she thought that way. So
it's a good quality to have, because it's not out there a lot.
No,
it's not.
You know,
I mean, I really should. I mean, like, because I have that, like, I really should open a PR agency or some shit like that, but I don't want to because I think I would hate it ultimately. I like to just help people organically. I actually hate, like, I don't like things that are, like, forced. So I if it happens, it happens, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Hey, Sarah, what projects are you currently working on?
I'm working on a book with a friend who's a neuropsychologist about anxiety and how it manifests in your brain and how it manifests emotionally. And the working title is "This Is What Anxiety Feels Like," and it's based upon the hashtag that I created on Twitter that went viral.
Right.
Do you have a camera in here looking at our questions?
Yeah. You love our house.
I know. I'm sorry, you guys. Like, I have surveillance happening.
that was literally Beck's next question. She was going to ask you about that hashtag. That's
so okay.
Funny.
Yeah, we can roll with that. So that hashtag came out because I'm really anxious and I am insecure when people don't get back to me, and I use Twitter as a coping mechanism for my anxiety. I'm not even fronting. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I do. Like, when I feel like my brain is, like, on fire, I'm just like, I'm just going to tweet random things. So I tweeted, when your friend doesn't get back to you and you think that they hate you or something like that. I don't remember. My thing is, like, when I text somebody and they don't get back to me within, like, 30 seconds, I think they hate me. And yeah. I'm exaggerating about 30 seconds, but, like, you know what I'm saying. Like, that you get the gist of it. So I hashtagged
it. The same thing.
What?
I said Beck goes for the same thing.
Yeah, we're all in the same anxious club. So I hashtagged it. This is what anxiety feels like. And then people started just using it, and then it was, like, trending in Canada for some reason. I don't know. Canadians really, you know what it is? I love Canadians. Like, I have so many Canadian friends, and I think because they're just completely no nonsense and, like, fun, and they curse a lot and they don't care about stupid things. And so that's why Canada loves me. But But yeah, so it was trending in Canada, and I obviously have no American pride. It's ridiculous. But yeah, it was trending in Canada, and well, also Canada has Bell Let's Talk. That's another thing. So I think that it was good timing because I did it like close to Bell Let's Talk. And so people were already in that mindset in Canada, and Canada gives a shit about mental health, so that's another thing, you know. So, yeah, so it just took off, and we're still kind of rolling with it. Like, people use it when they feel anxious, and I created a separate Twitter account for it, and it called I think it's called Anxiety Hashtag. I can tell you in a second. Yeah, if you can follow it, it's called Anxiety Hashtag.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's not exciting.
Well, she had to leave some kind of surprise for the show.
Did you go on to, is it Twubbs?
Yeah, I registered it at Twubbs. I own it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was going to suggest if you hadn't already done that to do it. I did that with our hashtag VF Change. So, but I think that's a really, really cool service that they offer, that you can just go on there and say, you know, this is mine, and, you know, you can use it, but you can't own it.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. I love Twubbs. It's the best.
So when you aren't advocating for mental health, what do you like to do in your free time?
Oh, what's free time?
It's that time where you're not getting pulled in 50 different directions. I hear that it's a thing.
Yeah, I've heard telltale of this. I don't really get free time ever, but when I do, I like to get out of New York and go to Portland.
Oregon or Maine?
Oregon. I love to travel a lot because I find that I'm a very restless person. And it makes me feel better about life to see new things.
That's a very cool outlook to have, too, you know, because, you know, if you've got the blinders on and you're doing your, you know, got your job and got your kids and got everything involved with that, you know, life passes you by like that. And, you know, being able to actually stop and look around and see what this world has to offer, It's precious when you get the opportunity.
I know.
Yeah,
I love it. Like, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rebecca. You were saying something.
No, I was just going to say I give you credit because, you know, my social anxiety, my anxiety wouldn't allow me to, you know, travel as frequently as you do and just, you know, sort of. It's hard. It's like it takes a week to talk me into, you know, in my head, to talk me into doing one thing, you know.
You know,
so
I get it. Like, I have tendencies like that, you know. And we talked a little about this yesterday, right? So, let me see. My brain is, like, having trouble working. Let me try to figure out how to say this. It doesn't really make any sense, right? Like, I can hop on a plane and go visit my friend in California, right? But I don't want to go to the bank because there are people there.
Yeah. It's too people-y in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Like that makes no sense at all. You know, but, I mean, it makes sense maybe to you guys because you get it, you know? But, like,
right.
but to other people that are not, that are, like, neurotypical, like, they don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, you know? So, it's like, yeah, like, I can, you know, or what's another example of that? I'm trying to think.
That's a pretty good example.
Yeah, but that's basically what it is, right? It's that weird thing where it's like, I can do this like really, you know, extreme thing where I like teleport to a 3,000 mile away land, you know. I don't want to go to your party. I don't want to go to your party because I don't want to talk to people, but I'm going to go on a plane to London.
Yeah, you know,
right.
What's funny about that is that mine is sort of on a smaller scale, but before, we have a P.O. box now, but when we were getting mail delivered to our house, I had this sort of, like, crippling fear of walking out in front of our house to the mailbox.
Mm-hmm.
My brain just kept telling me that I was going to get locked out or, you know, such and such was going to happen, you know, but I can get in the car and go places with Joe and, you know, have fun or whatever, but I couldn't get myself to go out to the front and get the mail. So one day somebody leaves a package on our porch and it was heavy and I had to step out a little bit to pick it up and the wind caught the door and slammed it shut and locked me out.
Oh, shit.
So it actually happened and I was barefoot in my pajamas.
It was March.
It was March. And there was nothing I could do. There's no way I could call anybody. Neither of our, you know, closer neighbors were home. You know, it was hard enough just walking around because I had no shoes. So long story short, I took a tank from the grill and smashed in our back door, our glass back door.
Dang.
And then
yeah.
walked in the house barefoot through the glass.
Yeah. Yeah, it was wild. And she calls me up and tells me what happened. And, you know, I drive a route for a living, right? So I'm on the other side of town in my work truck. She calls me. I've got maybe half my route done. I call my boss. I'm like, look, I had a problem at home. Can somebody come out and either help me get done or take over for me or something? I don't even remember what happened. Ran home. Cut a big old piece of wood to cover the door wall and, you know, worked on getting the money together to replace the door. And I felt so bad for her that she went through that.
And it was just so ridiculous. It was like my worst nightmare actually came true. So now whenever I get anxious about something or afraid that something's going to happen, it's like magnified 10,000 times because it actually did happen to me once.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, I felt like, I don't know, like a dude, you know, just out there chucking this kerosene tank at this like three panes of glass back door. I'm like, Hulk smash. I couldn't get into my house. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a different sort of a different way to look at it, you know, but I can do things with Joe, but I can't do simple things by myself.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left. Sarah, we'd like you to hang out on the line as we play out our last song.
Oh wait, so I don't get to sing? Come on, man!
Really quick before we sign off, can you sort of briefly answer this question? If you have any advice at all for someone who may have just been diagnosed or is struggling at this point with depression or anxiety or all of the above?
Talk to somebody that you trust and you're not alone. You're not alone. You are a beautiful person regardless of what you're going through. Tell someone you trust and it's okay. It's a medical condition. You're not weird and you can get help.
Perfect.
That's good advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Great advice. You know, Sarah, thank you so much for being here with us today. This has been a blast. And, you know, I really enjoy talking to you. And I knew that Joe would enjoy it, too. So
I had an awesome time.
Let's get donuts. Can we get donuts
wish you lived closer so we could actually hang out.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, I want to get donuts with you guys.
Oddly enough, we had donuts for breakfast.
Why am I in your house? This is ridiculous.
This is really weird. I don't know. I might be afraid of you.
I know. Maybe you shouldn't be my friend. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, obviously, that's really, really weird that I knew that you had donuts. Like, that's
it was
really
the fastest, fastest thing we could do.
If you know where we got the donuts, then it's all over.
Then you can't. That's like you should block me right now on Facebook. you don't have Dunkin' Donuts there, do you?
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's where we got the donuts, Sarah.
Well, you know what's so funny? So, like, I'm a big fan of Dunkin' Donuts because, you know, New York pride. New York strong. But I have the Dunkin' Donuts, like, whatever, frequent flyer thing. You know what I'm talking about. So,
yeah.
So, like, I get so many free beverages there because I'm always there.
Yeah, I love me some Dunkin', you know, but...
That and also, I'm sorry you guys have to go, but one more thing, just a Dunkin' Donuts thing, is that their coffee is way fucking better than Starbucks.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I'm
for
not
four
a coffee
bucks,
drinker,
as they say.
I can't weigh in on that, so.
Yeah.
You don't drink coffee?
No. She doesn't, I do.
Okay. All right, so what do you think, Joe? Is that right?
Yeah, it is. I prefer theirs to pretty much anybody else's. My own included. So, yeah, theirs is pretty good. McDonald's doesn't do a bad coffee either, though.
You know what? McDonald's has banging coffee, and anyone that says that they don't is lying.
Yeah, they've always had really good coffee, but it's not Dunkin', but it's damn close.
It's good, man. So. There was some article on that. Like, McDonald's coffee is, like, up there.
Yeah, it really is.
All right, well, we've got to head out here before – Scott pulls the plug on us, so
that sounds scary. I don't want to do that. Don't do that.
Thanks once again for being here and for putting up with our little shenanigans and our little technical difficulties this morning. We really appreciate it, and it's just been great talking to you. So, once you get that new book moving, we'll have you back on the show again, and it'll be awesome.
Woohoo!
All right. Thanks, Sarah. Stay on the line with us for just a minute. We're gonna play out to Casey Lansdale's Living in the Moment.
Okay, next time let me sing the Go Leaving song.
Easy to get off track, easy to lose your way. In a world that makes you believe there's no time to waste, that you gotta have it all, better have it all, better not slow down. Looking ahead got me looking in circles. Life with a plan at first seems hopeful. Worry that if time keeps flying by, but you gotta have faith. Don't let it slip away. Don't let me in the world drive you crazy. 'Cause I got a feeling if we keep believing, all that matters is right now. Forget about forever. Your past's already chosen. Start living in the moment.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.